Om Shanti. Good morning. Was it yesterday or the day before that Daddy was talking to us about being alert and active soldiers? And so I thought that one of the topics that I'd like to take up this morning is that of having an alert intellect. But connected with that, I remembered something else that is very much a deep practice in Brahman life, and that is the subject of the awakened mind. There's actually been a lot of research done into the subject on a Laukic level, and within that research, the things that they've shared are very much the external proof of the results of Raj Yoga. And it was fascinating for me to see this. And I found that so often, when there's external research that validates what Baba has said, then of course it's a wonderful way to be able to prove to the world that yes, these are spiritual statements or spiritual truths, but they're also corroborated by science or whatever research has been. But I also then began to realize that sometimes Brahmins also seek external proof, in the sense that, for example, Baba has told us about what the world is going to go through in terms of all the disasters and calamities and so on and so on. And what's very interesting for me is when Brahmins come to me and say, "Ah, but did you know that Nostradamus said this? Or did you know that the astrologer Jean Dixon said this?" Or, you know, something like that. And I begin to think, well, Baba has said this, and do I believe what Baba has said? And if I do, then that's it. But yet, of course, if Jean Dixon also says this, I say, oh yes, yes, now it makes sense. Or if Nostradamus said this, then I say, ah, you see, Nostradamus. So that's my point, that we also seek external verification sometimes. And maybe it's not even that. Maybe I have total faith anyway. So when I do find that there's other sources that validate what Baba has told me, it's good for me to know that, but it's also very good for me to share with the world out there. And so one of the statements that Daddy Janki has been using a lot has been this whole subject of don't think. And one of the statements that we use when we describe meditation is that you have to have good thoughts. And so from that statement of meditation and creating good thoughts to that subject of don't think, well, what does it mean and how does it fit in together? So this particular research, in terms of what they've described as the awakened mind, is very interesting because it shows how both of these things actually do fit together. It's also an image that, of course, Baba has used so often, awake and asleep. And Baba's not just talking about the 6 hours of sleep that the body requires, but the image of Kumbhakarna, the one who slept for 6 months and awoke for 6 months, and of course half the cycle awake, half the cycle asleep. And so that state of having been asleep, and that beautiful song of the Murali that says, "Awaken, O bride, the new age is about to come." And so when we first come to Baba, it is an awakening. When you're asleep, what are you like then? I mean, you're awake, what's the difference? And so that metaphor of sleep and awake is very much part of the whole subject of spirituality and being awake. But when they use this term, the awakened mind, at least in the Lokic level, they're talking about something very specific. And you're talking about that state when a person's been able to experience through meditation a clarity in which they're aware of what's going on in the conscious mind, but also the subconscious mind, and also the unconscious mind. We don't usually use these terms within our Brahman vocabulary, but they fit in very well. And I'll share more. But they describe the awakened mind as the mind that's able to travel through these different levels of consciousness very easily. And that first level, the conscious mind, well, that's how we live in the human world. If we didn't use our conscious mind, we wouldn't be able to relate to time and space and distance and logistical things and relationships with other people and all of these things that are absolutely essential and vital and a part of human life. And so, of course, that has to be awake and alert, which is a little bit different to what meditators sometimes say. You know, Dadi Gulzar was telling us a story one day of how this Mataji, and it was a story of 20, 30 years ago, but I think the same idea still persists. And she said how this Mataji had been telling her how wonderful yoga she'd been having. And then she said to Dadi, that Dadi, I was coming to morning class and I was having yoga on the bus. And I had such wonderful yoga that I missed my stop and I went on past and then I had to come back and so I was late for class. Good yoga? Not good yoga. But you can see how sometimes people think that being in some dream world up there and not being aware of anything down here is good yoga. And that's not what I see in the Dadis. Brahma Baba I knew a little bit. The Dadis, of course, knew Baba so well. But I saw Baba through my childhood years and teenage years, but without really knowing that Shiv Baba, Brahma Baba, Shiv Baba works through Brahma Baba. I didn't know any of that, so I just saw Brahma Baba as a wonderful personality with a lot of charisma. And at that time, the interesting thing for me used to be, I'll give you an example. I'd met Baba 8 years old in Delhi. And then I met Baba again when I was 15. And so this was just the year after Mama had left the body. Mama had left in 1965, June the 24th, which is one of the days in our calendar across the Brahman world when we have special meditation and offer bhog to Mama. I'm mentioning this because not all centers are always aware that this is something that needs to happen. And we usually send out a list of dates that includes all the Indian festivals, but also like Mama's Day, Didi's Day, and so on. And so these are special days of great power. So 65 was Mama's departure, and we were in Madhuban 66. And I was about 16 years old, something like that. And I didn't even know how to meditate. I didn't know anything. And Baba wanted all the Kumaris to be in the front line. And so I was there in the front line and I didn't even have the white costumes that you have today. I just had my skirts and so on. So there's this little girl sitting in the front. And yes, I loved Baba because of the beauty of his personality and the warmth of his presence. And after speaking, this was in the night class because we'd arrived in the afternoon at some point and said hello to Baba. And it was about 30, 40 people in the history hall. When were you last in the history hall? I don't know. But I was there just a few days ago. And it was amazing for me to see the physical reality of how small the history hall is. Because in my memory, the history hall seems big, because that's where Baba used to give class, give the murali. And that was the teaching place for Brahman Baba and Shiv Baba all the time that Baba was Sakar. And this time, a few days ago being there, I noticed that it was actually quite small. And in my memory, it was very big. But Baba on the gadi, and Baba always sat upright, semi lotus posture, age at that time in his 80s, and right through to the time of departure, 93 years old. Baba didn't need a backrest like I do. Baba didn't need a chair. Baba sat on the gadi, absolutely upright. So that's credible proof of the power of yoga, if nothing else. But in the 80s at that time, and Baba's given the murali, evening murali was a little bit chit-chat. Morning muralis, as you see, the teacher, the supreme teacher, and there was no interaction. Sometimes Baba would ask a question, and very, very rarely would wait for an answer. Very rarely. Most times it was, you know, the ocean coming forth and sharing everything from the ocean. So it was a lesson, not interactive. But in the evening murali, Baba would chat, and after the murali, then Baba would engage, and Baba would ask the children what they'd been doing, what was going on. Sometimes even before starting the murali, again, some interaction. And this particular day, Baba spoken a short murali. It was quite short in the evenings. And then Baba looked at me and said, "Child, you've just arrived today. Do you have everything you need?" And Baba was speaking very simple Hindi, so that much I could understand. And then Baba said, "Do you have your toothbrush and brush and your towel?" And I said, "Yes." And then Baba said, "But if there's anything you need, don't hesitate. Just ask. Everything is available. It's Baba's house. It's the house of the Father. Anything is available." And it touched my heart so deeply that here's Baba, who's, you know, the father of the whole yajna, and yet Baba is concerned about tiny little things like somebody's toothbrush and toothpaste. Why should it bother Baba? You know, there were other people I could have asked, others I knew. And then afterwards somebody told me that usually it had been Mamma who had looked after practical details such as this on the human level, the mother looking after the children's physical well-being and concern, and Mama now Avyakt. And so Baba had taken on the role of mother and father. And so Baba together caring for the children on practical details, physical well-being, and also the most powerful spiritual sustenance and insights. And so this combined role of mother and father started being enacted after Baba, after Mama became Avyakt through that time. But why I'm sharing with you this story is because it's a perfect illustration of that situation where a meditator, a yogi, isn't just somewhere up in the sky, but a yogi is one who's totally alert and aware and is concerned that everything on all levels should be accurate and is concerned that on all levels of consciousness that everything is alert. And so Baba, conscious mind and very, very aware of practical physical details and whatever other needs of others and be wanting to fulfill those needs. You see how concerned the dadis are with your physical well-being, whether it's providing comfortable transport, whether it's providing ice cream for dessert, you know, whatever, whatever. So you get proof of how the conscious mind, the awakened mind works. And so I can't ignore the things that are happening on the external level. They are absolutely a part of my life and are important and valuable. So let me pay attention to that. With the awakened mind, I'm able to go further and not just think about the things of logic and reason, but I'm able to go deeper. And that stage, which is described as the subconscious. And in that subconscious state, how do I do that? One very simple thing, again, you see like Hatha Yoga. And Hatha Yoga tells you, turn your body like this, do that, do the other, and finally you'll achieve a state in which you've conquered your mind. And Baba says something which is completely different. Baba says, start with the focus of the mind. And when your mind is focused, your breathing will become calm. You'll be able to feel a difference in your breathing. When you're excited and nervous and fearful, what's your breathing like? But you're so conscious, you're centered, and there's an impact on your breathing. And then further, the body also comes into the state of total relaxation in which all the tensions and the pressures that have accumulated are released and you're able to let go of all of that. And so not that you force the body and hope you train your mind. No, you start with the mind and through that you're able to have the body in the comfort and harmony that it needs to be in. So Kali Yuga, everything topsy-turvy. And what Baba's doing is turning things the right way up. And so again, what struck me about this description in terms of Lokic research is how they're saying that in the state of mind, which is the conscious mind, the speed of thoughts is quite fast. And then what happens further is that from that state, you don't have to remember these names, but information if it's useful for you. But that state is described as the beta state. Then you get into the state in which you're beginning to meditate and the speed of thoughts has slowed down and you reach the alpha state. Now, within this alpha state, what they're describing is the state in which there's a doorway into spirituality. You're opening the door into meditation. You're beginning to access the deeper parts of consciousness. Then they describe the state which is the theta state. Again, forget about these names if they're a bother. But just an interesting description of a state in which the speed of thoughts is even slower, much, much, much slower. And in this theta state, then in this awareness, you're able to have personal insights. You're able to have creativity. You're able to have moments of realizations. And you're able to have a deep state of understanding. And then they describe another state, which has then been given the title, the delta state. And in the delta state, even slower brain waves. And within this state, the state in which there's empathy, there's a connectedness with other people, the whole family of the globe, not just your isolated position, but an empathy with everyone. And you're able to connect with your own deep intuition and also your innermost emotions. And the state between theta and delta, that state of realization and creativity, and this state of delta, has been described as the process of healing. a state in which the healing of the self can take place. And why I say that sometimes in Lokic things get a bit topsy-turvy. You know, what happens is that, okay, you read about all this, or maybe you even see that all this research is amazing. But how do you get there? How do you actually make it happen? How do you take charge and say, right, this is where I want to go, and this is how I'm going to do it? And Baba tells us how. There, they take a subject and they put all sorts of equipment on them to measure the brain waves, and then whatever practice it is that meditator has, if it's a long-term practitioner, then they're able to guarantee what sort of results they're going to get, and they're going to have that. But here Baba makes it very, very simple. And Baba says, first step, soul consciousness. And in that state, start creating thoughts that are positive and good. Start creating thoughts that are related to truth and reality. And the reality of that situation, when we begin to meditate, what are we doing? I'm a soul. I'm a child of God. We're creating the thoughts of Gyan that Baba has taught us. And automatically what's happening is, when you're thinking about externals, the mind is moving very fast. When you're thinking about your own inner world and the thoughts of Gyan, the speed of thoughts is automatically slowing down. And so the very technique of meditation that Baba's teaching us, learn to think in the right way. And not only for the 10 minutes of meditation, but no, learn to think in the right way, period, all the time. Because if you don't learn to think in the right way, then you're going to get back again into the things out there, and that's not satisfactory. If living life on the level out there was satisfying, you would never have sought Baba. You would never have sought the spiritual path. And so if you don't learn to think in the right way all the time, you're out there again. You're not going to be able to stay with Baba. And so create the right thoughts, and automatically the speed of thoughts is slow down. And not only do you want to learn to create the right thoughts, and this is why every day the Murali is so important. You know, they say that each one of us creates about 30,000 thoughts a day. And for some people, it's more than that. And did you know that one of the most common illnesses in today's world, and it's a growing illness, they say that the second biggest illness that's coming up in terms of statistics and the fastest rate is the illness of mental health. And that's worldwide. It's not just in the developed world or in one part of the world. It's a worldwide phenomenon. And what happens in that is that where on a Lokic level, people think too fast and they tire themselves out. And on the Brahman level, one of the things that comes up in the Murali, Nischit Bhavi, destiny is fixed. And the destiny that's fixed is a beautiful one. It's the age of truth, the world of hope, the world of joy that's ahead of us. It's destined. And so if I keep that as my focus, what am I worrying about? Is there something to worry about? I am with God. Today Baba said, having found Baba, you found the earth, the sky, everything belongs to you. And so is there anything to worry about? The speed with which the mind is functioning in a state of worry is an accelerated speed. Have you noticed that yourself? You know, have you ever felt your head get very hot? And it's not just the heat of the sun, but it's your mind moving too quickly. And in that state where the mind moves too quickly, worry and anxiety. And actually, worry has no part when there's faith. If somebody is worried about something, is that an awakened state of mind? Is that the state of God's child? Is that a state of faith? Somebody who is now a Brahmin, but at that time when it happened to them, they weren't a Brahmin, but they were actually a Muslim. And she told me that she'd come from her country in the Middle East to London to study. And it was such a big difference of culture. And she wondered whether she came for education. And she wondered whether she was going to be able to cope with the culture shock and a life in which she didn't know who to turn to, who to trust, who could be her friends, and also concerns about her capability in the study. Am I going to be able to make the grade? Am I good enough? And plus finances between her country and London, vast difference. And so am I going to be able to manage? And so all these ingredients had caused a lot of concern and worry. And obviously her communication with her parents must have reflected that, to the point where her father flew across to be with his 21-year-old daughter. She'd got one degree, she was doing another degree. So to be with his 21-year-old daughter and ask her, well, what's going on? And she told him, this, 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 and this. And then he said to her, because she'd been a devout Muslim and praying, you know, with sincerity. And so he said to her, well, what happened to your faith? And she said that I was so annoyed when he told me that. Of course I have faith in God. And then, after a little while, she realized that where there's faith, there's no worry. And that was on a Laukic level, in bhakti. And she said, of course, after that she came into gyan. And, of course, gyan has given her proof that there's absolutely no cause for worry for anything at all. But rather the vibrations of worry. You know, if I believe that my thoughts create vibrations. Do I believe that? Yes, I believe that. Okay, so my good thoughts of God's remembrance are creating the good vibrations of peace, of love, of truth that are being shared with the world that will ultimately transform the world. I believe that. Well, how come I don't believe the other side then? That if for whatever reason, lack of understanding, lack of practice, lack of company, lack of faith. But if my thoughts are the other way, if they're negative thoughts or waste thoughts, then what's that going to do to the atmosphere and the vibrations? It's going to create a fog. And a fog in which others are not going to feel very comfortable, but certainly I'm not going to be very alert and clear about anything either. And so when the mind is working very quickly, anxiety, worry, and it gets to the point where it exhausts itself, where it gets itself into a negative rut in which it's no longer able to have hope and have a clear vision of the future. And that's the state of ill health, mental ill health, which then, to a certain level, then comes to be called depression. And as I said, it's the fastest growing illness in the world, and it'll probably become the number two killer in the world also, at the way it's going. That's a prediction by the World Health Organization. And where Baba says, don't worry. That's the thing. But I can't just tell myself I mustn't worry. But I have to have the right understanding. And the right understanding is faith in myself, faith in Baba, faith in Dharma, faith in time, faith in my family, this family, faith that everything is moving in the right direction. Everything is moving in the right way. And you know where Baba says Dharma is a louse. Have you ever seen a louse walk? Probably some of you have never seen a louse. Who's never seen a louse? Well, it's this tiny, tiny little creature. And it's very, very slow. You have to really look at it. I've never held one in my hand. But if you see one, then you see it's moving very, very, very slowly. But it also moves in a very fixed pattern. Straight. It doesn't know to go here or to go there. So on the one side, you know, that fixation, but that's drama. Drama sometimes moves more slowly than I would like. I would like to be karmatit today. And, you know, when tomorrow, quite possibly, Baba's going to ask us again, well, how long are you going to take to become karmatit? You know, Baba's been asking us this question for a few years now. And so maybe tomorrow Baba's going to ask us, a month? 6 months? A year? And then when Baba wants us to do something quickly, we all put up our hands and say, oh yes, we can do it. And then of course afterwards we realize that drama is taking its own sweet time. And yes, Baba wants drama to move fast. Baba wants us to move fast. And then finally Baba has said, okay, I'm a detached observer. And so I want to be karmatit, but it's taking time. And that's okay. Let me keep my vision focused very clearly on my destination. But let me know that at least I have to keep that vision fixed straight and not get diverted here and there. The louse, you know, completely fixed. And if I'm moving, then ahead of drama, I would like us to move a bit further ahead. Not that the natural disasters come to us like they have in many parts of the world and I'm not prepared, but I'm prepared, so a step ahead of drama. And so the point that when there's faith, there's no worry. And yes, I have my vision focused on where I'm going, but I'm not even worried about my own effort. Intense, sincere, honest effort is one thing. Worrying about my effort is of no use to anyone. Definitely no use to me. And definitely if I say to Baba, yes, Baba, I'm a bit worried about my effort, Baba's not going to say, yes, that's a very good child. So Baba doesn't want me to worry about effort. Baba wants me to get on with it and move on with effort. And so my point that don't let the mind go racing. The mind that goes racing and worries about anything does not have a very good future. And it loses power completely. And you're far, far away from that inner consciousness of being able to tap into your own inner resources. And so, research. Slowing down the speed of the mind is very much an essential part of yogi life. And if I can do that, then I'll be able to achieve that state in which I can be flexible, I can be understanding, I can access the powers that Baba wants me to access, I can use all of that. And so, soul consciousness. Stop thinking. Just be the soul. And then the thoughts that you're going to create are good thoughts based on Baba's murali. Why does Baba need to give us a murali every day? I don't know of another organization where they get fresh lessons every day. And not only do we get fresh lessons every day, we get fresh messages from time to time, plus we get fresh avyakt muralis, bonus, bonus, bonus. And so we get a lot of fresh material. And if my mind is reflecting on those things, the speed of thoughts is definitely going to get slower, which is why Baba says, use the power of churning. And as you churn, you're going to get into that state of meditation. 5 years in Gyan, 10 years in Gyan, and people still sometimes say, but what am I actually supposed to be doing in meditation? How come I'm not having an experience in meditation? It doesn't happen by force, but it happens in a very gentle way through understanding. And so the churning. And as I churn the knowledge, my mind becomes much calmer, much quieter. And I'm at that stage of from beta to alpha to theta. I'm connecting with the source of truth, the one who has given me all this amazing insight. And as my mind becomes quiet, and I've taken aspects of knowledge, and I'm going into the experience of those aspects, that becomes my own personal insight. That becomes my creative solution to the situations out there. I met with two people today, and they're facing a challenge in terms of service in their country. It's a good challenge, it's not a negative challenge, it's a new project, but of course they've got many things that they're having to deal with on the external level. And I'd seen that yesterday they spent time talking to Daddy, and so my assumption was that everything's okay, it's clear. And then they said to me, but they needed to see me. And I said, but you've met Daddy. And they said, no, he still needs, okay. So I sit down and I make space to listen to the things that they're sharing. And the first thing they say is that when they spoke to Daddy, then after they'd spoken, Daddy just said, well, what you need to do is to have more yoga. And so she gave one of them a book that he hadn't had, you know, the homework book, Bestower and Benefactor. Some of you have had it, some of you haven't maybe, but it's also been printed in Spanish, I think, now. But it's got the essence of the homework from the last season's Muralis, and so different themes, different points, and Daddy loves that book, and she's churned it very deeply. And so she said to the person who didn't have this, first, have lots of yoga, and then second, take this book and study it. Do your homework. And today he's meeting me and he says, but Daddy just said, you know, study this book and that'll be the answer. But I need practical answers to my questions. And I said, okay, let me listen. And so then they took me through the different logistical details. And then at the end of it, I said, but the answer that Daddy gave you is absolutely the only one that Daddy can give you. Because the situation that you're talking about doesn't have a practical answer. You're talking about people and their perception, and how if they were to change their mind in a positive direction, they could cooperate and things will happen. And if they choose not to cooperate, then everything gets stuck and the project falls apart. And I said, that's all it is. Your vibrations have to be such that it reaches those people so that their perception and their attitude changes from one, maybe neutral, maybe negative, into one that's positive. And then they're going to cooperate with you. And so I said, the answer that Daddy gave you was absolutely the right one. And then they smiled and they said, yes, it's true, isn't it? I said, you see, when we get stuck into logic things and logistical things, then we think, but there has to be an answer. What should I do? How can I do it? It has to be now. And Daddy, she's a master. She's seeing us go round in circles. And she knows if she joins us in going round in circles, that's no point. It's not going to help us. It's not going to bring the answer. But if she stays with Baba and gives them an answer that's from up here, then when I'm down here, I say, but Daddy didn't answer my question. But she did. She actually gave me the creative solution. But my mind is so occupied with all these other brain waves that I'm not grasping it. It's very interesting. And so for me to slow down, positive thoughts, soul consciousness, connect with Baba. And I don't even need to ask Daddy. I can verify it with her and check with her, but I don't need to ask her because in that quiet state of mind, I've gone below the surface of all these ripples and waves, and in that state, I've connected with my own inner creativity. And Baba had given the answer a kalpa ago that everything was going to be fine. It's Ixton drama. It's going to be beneficial. It's going to be benevolent. But when I become quiet and I connect with Baba in Baba's presence, I know that that's the answer. And so creative solutions, not just in terms of, you know, X, Y, Z, but creative solutions in terms of how those vibrations reach other souls and make them turn around and become cooperative is God's magic that we see happening continually. Many of you may have heard the story of Red Fort, and this was in the 70s when the president of Russia was coming. Who hasn't heard that story? Oh, it's a good few. It's worth telling you. I'll try and condense it because it's a very detailed, beautiful story, but I can date it. I think it must have been around 1973. So Baba's just been a Vyakta short while. Pandav Bhavan in Delhi has just been acquired, and that was our first big property outside of Madhuban, so it's a big deal. It's the capital of India, and we are there, and the Delhi people, and Jagdish Pai was leading the whole thing, and the whole of India is cooperating. And what we're going to do is to have a big mela, one of the gatherings where it was the first mela, where different states took responsibility for different stalls, and each stall had a different theme, like meditation, like virtues, like service, like, you know, different things, character building, all sorts of things like that, about 12, 14 different stalls. And this is on the Ram Leela grounds in Delhi, which is a big, big public arena, which is government ground. And it's a very central, very important place, and we needed that sort of space. And so the application we made, it being said yes, we were going to get the Ram Leela grounds, everything was fixed. And then the construction of the stands has happened already. And as that is happening, a couple of days into it, then we get a letter from the government saying that the Russian president is coming and we need to honor him and have the celebrations on the Ram Leela grounds on the day that we were supposed to be starting our thing. And there's a shock. You know, what's going to happen? Where are we going to find another place? We've publicized this for weeks and weeks. We started the construction. What's going to happen? What's going to happen? And Dadi Gulzar, and you press a button with Dadi Gulzar and she flies up and she's got a hotline to God, and she asks God, and she comes down, and she gives us an answer. And Dadi Kumarka is there, everybody's there, you know, the main people of the Yajna, Dadi, all the Dadis, and Jagdish Pai, all of them. And Baba's answer is, do tapasya. And Dadi Kumarka takes it very seriously. And so there's going to be non-stop tapasya, non-stop tapasya. And the second thing that Baba says, don't stop your construction. Keep going ahead with the construction. And so, two very clear signals. So those who are on the field, action field, they move on fast with the construction and everything goes up. And on the other side, those who are at home, yoga power, yoga power, yoga power. They go to the government and say, but you know, you had said yes, why are you now saying no? And they have a very interesting comment. They said that, well, Russia is our food supplier at the moment. 70s and India didn't have enough grain, and Russia was sending grain to India. And there are food suppliers. How can you displease your food supplier? And they didn't want to change anything. It had to be like that. And then we said to them, but come and see how much work has been done. And meanwhile, because of Baba's message, day and night, the construction team went on, and they just went on and on and on. And we didn't know, but Indira Gandhi was in power, and she sends somebody to check it out incognito, and he sees two things. He sees this huge army of people doing the work, and he sees the statues of the goddesses, because, you know, we talk about the Shaktis and give them the spiritual explanation of all of this. So they had all these idols of the Shaktis that had been created in Bengal and had now arrived in Delhi, and they were going to be put up on the stands. And so the report goes back to Indira Gandhi that they have a huge army of people there. It's not just a few contractors and construction workers, but it's a lot of people there. And if, for example, these people get upset and you have your program for the president, they might do something that's not going to be very pleasant. Now, they don't know us and that we're non-violent. But they're thinking in a logic way, you know, all these people, and you upset these people, and there's going to be a demonstration in front of the president. Well, that's not going to be very respectful. And B, he tells Indira Gandhi that, but you know, they've got the Devis there. And you don't know what sort of curse is going to come on us if we touch the... And so the instruction to do the work, great. But the instruction to do the yoga, now, the report had gone to Indira Gandhi, and we didn't know that, of course, so we're just carrying on. Evening, and there's still no answer. Carry on yoga through the night, yoga through the night. Thadiji, there in Delhi with yoga. Early morning, still do yoga. And then somebody phones and says, have you seen today's paper? And we'd all been either working or doing yoga, so nobody's seen the paper. And the paper has the front page and a statement, Russian president to be honored at Red Fort. Not at the Ramlila grounds, which is where we were. And they'd changed the venue, and it had been publicized in the papers, and we got to see it afterwards. And the yoga power had changed their consciousness to look at things differently and find another solution, so that the president was honored. Red Fort is very prestigious, but whatever they needed to do to make that happen, they made it happen, and Baba's work carried on. So at that time, then Baba's message had come, this is the victory of the Pandavas over the Kauravas. And the victory had happened not by fighting. The victory had happened through yoga power. And so creative solutions happen through yoga power. But the scientific evidence that, yes, when your brain waves are functioning at a slower speed, and it's that level of theta waves, then you have the aha, the realizations. You know, when you realize something, aha, now I know. So you describe it as the aha moments. That happens when the mind is in that theta state. The other state, the delta state. So not just the subconscious, but the unconscious. Things that I'm really completely unaware of that I'm carrying. And the mind has become slower and slower and slower, and we would say that alpha state, you're thinking in that positive state and making that connection with Baba. Theta state, now you're connected with Baba and you're beginning to receive Baba's light and might. Delta state, the mind completely quiet. You're deep in that experience of God's light and God's love. You don't need a conscious thought to label it or describe it. You're in that experience. And that's the state that's been described as the state of connectedness with the whole world, empathy with the whole world, but also that state in which healing happens. How come Brahmins still carry sorrow? You found Baba, you know that soul is eternal. Okay, someone is here, someone is gone, but there's an eternal connection, especially amongst Brahmin souls. There's a connection that's been there for 84 births. We've been through the whole cycle together. And so today they're here, tomorrow they're in an avyakt form, they're in a different form. No sorrow. Our thoughts, God's remembrance is reaching them, and they're receiving that light and love. There is no reason to have sorrow in Brahman life. If there's something I've done, well, let me sort it out and put it right. If there's something somebody else has done, let me be able to let go and forgive so that I can be free. Otherwise, the things that I carry and suppress, lack of forgiveness isn't just a problem for the other individual. Lack of forgiveness is my problem. Because lack of forgiveness means that I'm holding on to the hurt or the harshness that's happened, and it's there contained within me. And so it's going to interfere in everything that I do. Doesn't matter who did it, who said what, or what happened. That's a secondary factor. For whatever it is that's happened, but my lack of forgiveness is carried in a hard space in which Baba's love isn't reaching. And so I have to sort that out with gyan and deep realization. And then when I've been able to let go, then Baba's light and Baba's love can reach me. And in that state in which the soul is absolutely experiencing God's love, no need for conscious thoughts, just a state of quietness. That state that we describe as feelings is connected with the unconscious mind, because I can still tap into it and understand what's going on if I use the time for silence. But that state described as emotions is associated with my unconscious state. Why are these emotions the way they are? What is the sorrow that I carry that's not allowing me to experience the attainment and the happiness of Brahman life today? And so that healing of the things that I don't even understand, that can only happen through God's love. And taking my mind very deeply into silence. And so transformation of my emotions happens through silence. And so from the state of, yes, think in the right way, to the state of don't think. Just use Baba's love. Use the power of God's love for yourself, and use the power of God's love in terms of relationships with others. And then you can see how the don't think mantra is absolutely what it is we need at this moment in the drama. The awakened mind means being able to move through all these different states very easily. So that not that I get into a deep state of yoga and then afterwards I forget what I've experienced, or that I've had a realization. Then when I come out of yoga and I say, in yoga it was so clear, but what was it? I can't remember it anymore. And so the awakened mind means being able to see all of these different states and being aware of them and being able to move through them. It means not being rigid in my thinking. It means being flexible, because I can see things from many different perspectives. Not just my perspective, but your perspective too, and yours, and yours, and yours. But also, I can see things not just from the present, but I can see things from past and future also. The Trikaldarshi vision, the vision of the three aspects of time that Baba spoken of. Awakened mind, aware means I'm in charge of my emotions. I can allow my emotions to move in a positive direction so that they're filled with God's love and a feeling of compassion for all. Awakened mind means freedom, because I have many choices and I can see what my choices are. The rigid mind, the linear mind, and there's only one way I can go, and I say, well, there's no other answer. We had a meeting the other day, and in that somebody said, well, we can either do this or we can do this. It has to be one or the other. And then a few people said, but that's not it. There's other ways also. There's a third possibility. There's a fourth possibility. It isn't that it's only this way or this way. There are many possibilities. And so the awakened mind means being aware of many possibilities, and through that being able to have freedom of choice and see, well, what is it that's going to lead me to my destination? But the most important lesson out of all of this is slow down, slow down, slow down. Don't think too much. First, just slow down. Stay in connection with Baba. Good thoughts, pure thoughts, positive thoughts, not just in meditation, but all the time. And then, yes, you'll be able to experience the power of silence. But also, one of the factors that happens with Brahmins is that we'll say, I love the Gyan, but I haven't had an experience. I want an experience. And then the experience that Baba gives isn't flashing lights or visions, but the experiences, the inner experiences through that connection with Baba. But when my mind is quiet, then Baba's experiences can reach me. My mind in a state of upheaval, and Baba's wanting me to experience that love, and it's blocked. I can't feel it. It's not reaching me. What I'd like us to do now for the next 10-15 minutes, I've spent most of my time talking about the awakened mind, because very much the subject of the alert intellect is part of this, as you can see, because the soul is a tiny point of light, and at times when you're using conscious thoughts, you call it the mind, and when you're allowing the mind to become quiet and you're seeing right and wrong and you're listening to that sound of the conscience, then you label it intellect. And so it's different labels we're using to try and clarify it, but it's the same energy. And so as you learn to keep your mind positive and quiet, not lazy and stagnant, but positive and quiet, then automatically your intellect is very, very alert. Where Maya comes in, and again, I think it was yesterday that Daddy spoke about it. Why is it that I make a mistake? And yes, it's body consciousness. But even the cause of body consciousness is actually laziness. Yeah? It's laziness and carelessness that causes mistakes. And I'm not talking about laziness in terms of I want to sleep for 8-10 hours, but laziness in terms of what's going on in here. where I'm alert, I know that every thought is important and valuable. And every thought can open the door to many treasures. But equally, every thought can lead to pain and suffering. And so, attention on every thought. And so, the alert intellect, that aspect of the self which is checking and watching, is checking the quality of thought. And are my thoughts in that awareness of eternity and the eternal self? Or are my thoughts down here as this, the body, and the limited things of bodily needs and bodily people? Alertness, and I keep my mind and my consciousness on the level that Baba wants. And in that state of alertness, soul consciousness, I can see where it is Maya has a possibility to enter. I've stopped checking, I've become lazy, I've become body conscious, and Maya's jumped at me and I haven't even realized it. But soul consciousness, and I'm aware. And so I know that these are the entry points for Maya. This is where I can get sensitive, this is where I'm going to react, this is where there's possibility that I can feel sorrow. And so before it happens, alertness means knowing that, catching it, so that it doesn't come your way, but you're able to finish it before it actually happens. So no time and energy lost on any level. And so the awakened mind, aware. The alert intellect, attentive, checking all the time. What I'd like to do now is to get into a meditation as you're experimenting with these ideas. And all of you have been in Gyan for different periods of time, but certainly no one here is new, because all the newcomers are having a separate session. So definitely all of you have been in Gyan at least 2 years, 3 years plus. So you've heard many commentaries. But the purpose of this is not just to do another commentary. The purpose of this is to let you get into that awareness where you do your own commentary for yourself when you have a moment, even just a moment, and do a commentary to yourself. But you have half an hour, do a commentary to yourself. Don't just let the mind become blank and wait for something to happen. Something will happen. You know what? Sleep. Will you just keep your mind blank and say, okay, now let me see what happens. You're gone. Because there's a vacuum, and so you're not filling it with anything. But alert, and then what do? You consciously use Gyan. So let's do a meditation together. Instead of the world out there, I go on a fascinating journey to see the world inside. Where are my thoughts going? I want them to focus. Focus on I, the soul. Baba has told me, and I believe it. And this is who I am. Truly, I am a soul and not the body. In Sangam Yuga, this body is very precious. Through this body I study. Through this body I serve and do good karma. But now I focus inside and allow the consciousness of the body to fade into the distance. I watch my thoughts. I choose the thought that I want. Of I, the eternal being, I have always existed. No beginning and no end. I am immortal. I am light. And in this awareness of light, the sacred presence of the highest on high, my sweetest, most beloved father and mother are in front of me. From the source of light, the light reaches me. The light opens up everything in my world inside. God's light shows me what's been happening in my mind. There's been so much mischief. But now my mind is obedient and calm. The truth of God's light illuminates my discernment capacity, my conscience. I was confused before. And the light of truth makes it clear. I understand. God's light of love heals my emotions. Shanti.